medical department only to go to the bench, and we are more than a dozen.
You don't train, you only recover. That's a situation.
Preparation, hard work, confidence in overcoming those difficult moments.
Today we're still outside Liverpool and we are going to the first part of the medical test.
Welcome to this Football Medicine and Performance podcast. My name is Dara Rooney, a doctor currently working in football, and your host for today's podcast. Today, we're going to do things rather differently. Rather than just one speaker, I have the pleasure of being joined by two experts in their respective fields. We are joined today by Jonathan Smith, Managing Director of Promotion Fitness, and Dr. Olivia Greenhalgh, a Senior Research Associate at MMU, who previously carried out her PhD on developing cryotherapy protocols for knee injury management using the Promotion EV1 device. For our listeners who don't know about Promotion, Promotion EV1 is a cutting-edge and versatile device designed to help reduce recovery times in elite athletes and is currently the official lead sponsor of the FMPA. In this episode, we look to explore the changes in the clinical guidelines and typical practices when it comes to the use of cryotherapy, contrast therapy, heat and compression therapy within elite football, specifically within the context of the player, but also the medical practitioner using these modalities. So thank you very much for joining us today, Jonathan and Olivia.
Thank you, Dar.
Right, so Jonathan, just starting with you, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and giving our listeners a little bit of insight into your background.
Sure. Good afternoon, Dara and listeners. Yeah. Great to be here. My background is not from a medical or a physiotherapy background. I'm more from a business perspective, coming up to 40 years in business, working mainly in technical products for brands, you know, global brands like Velcro, Hilti, BASF. And I'm passionate about product innovations, in particular product innovations that challenge the norm and can deliver significant benefits to the customer. You know, there is product innovation that helps us, but, you know, not everybody likes new, and innovation, you know, drives some change. So that's what I'm passionate about. And, you know, my previous experience with companies like Hilti, you know, we had a team of people as marketing director where we were launching 30 new products a year. So listening to customers, understanding what their needs are and what uses of tools need to deliver is my passion and my background that led me to join Promotion Fitness sort of 18 months ago, and work very closely with Olivia. So maybe a good gateway for Olivia.
Yeah, shall I jump in there? So I'm Olivia Greenhalgh, Senior Research Associate at Manchester Metropolitan University. My previous role was Technical Specialist working at Swellaway. So my PhD carried out was working really closely with the device and developing clinical protocols for knee injury management in particular. So I'm sure we'll talk about some of that research in this podcast today.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you both. I think we have found the two most fitting guests that we possibly could for this topic. So thank you very much for joining us. Moving on to the main discussion points of the podcast, Jonathan, if we could start with you. We touched on Promotion EV1 in our intro. Would you mind giving our listeners a bit more insight into what Promotion Fitness is as a company, and how Promotion EV1 can be used within football and across elite sport?
Sure. Promotion Fitness and the company Swellaway Limited, you know, goes back to the original development and innovation in 2009, and eventually launched the product in November 21. So I guess, you know, what have we been working on since 2009 to get to 21 before we launched the product? Well, most significantly, the business, you know, won research and development funding from the UK government, which allowed us to work with, you know, two leading universities, with Manchester Metropolitan and UCLan, and at the time employ, you know, Olivia Greenhalgh, and who is now Dr. Olivia Greenhalgh, doing her PhD, as she said, in the development of the product. And the main development innovation was around using thermoelectric components to accurately control skin temperature. That innovation is what sits behind the product. We know, and Olivia can talk more to that, you know, how inaccurate ice, water, gels, and other typical modalities are, not just reducing skin temperature in many cases, but accurately controlling it is the tricky part. So the business then continued with the universities and Olivia between 2017 and 21, and we worked very closely with FMPA members like Derek Wright at Newcastle or even Nathan Mills at St. Helens, and in another sport, and amongst many others, we wanted to build the research that sat behind the product. You know, how does it control skin temperature? What does it do from cold cryotherapy to contrast therapy to thermotherapy, and where are they useful? What are the typical protocols? But, you know, getting feedback from practitioners that helped us shape the product was key. Where are we now? As a business, we sell EV1 in 20 different countries, including as far afield as Japan, Australia, and across Europe. EV1's real portability with no ice, no water means it's been picked up in other key sports, touring sports like tennis, golf, amongst others, where they can't travel with ice and big kits and use electric, so battery-operated products to deliver targeted therapy, you know, sits well in other sports as well. But if we focus in on football, EV1 is part of the medical kit for many teams across the top four levels of the EFL. And also it's in the kits of two international teams, along with professionals as well, footballers themselves. EV1's been purchased by medical teams, many of those FMPA team members, but also in other cases, you know, the professional footballer themselves has purchased the product so they can deliver that targeted therapy for warm-up, cool-down and recovery, and use it along with the club's equipment. But outside of when they're in the club, they're traveling or in a hotel room, they can use the product. So that's kind of where we are as a business.
Well, yeah, thanks, Jonathan, for that introduction. It's clear that you guys have come a long way from the start. But I think to start the podcast, if we could go back to basics a bit, and that really comes to, you know, the key question is to ice or not to ice. And that's an area that causes quite a lot of confusion in the rehab journey. For example, when should we use it in the acute setting firstly, and whether it actually plays a role further down the rehab in the subacute and chronic rehab phases. So Olivia, this is probably where it's best to bring you in. The research supporting cryotherapy is quite mixed. Can you give our listeners a little bit of insight into the research and your particular thoughts on to ice or not to ice?
Yeah, of course. I think it's a really interesting question. And ice is obviously something that stood the test of time in terms of it's been around since the ancient Greek times. And, you know, it's very good at what it does in terms of being that analgesic effect. But it's been more so into question recently around the actual efficacy in terms of its tissue healing properties. So I think that's where it's kind of created a bit of confusion, whereas for a long time, kind of clinically, people were chucking ice on because it has stood the test of time in terms of pain relief, but not necessarily thinking about all the other consequences or clinical reasoning of why you would put it on. So I think it kind of opens up a really interesting conversation, because you can kind of actually have a bit more rationale on why you're using ice. So obviously, originally with the clinical guidelines started at RICE with the rest ice compression elevation, then moving on to PRICE, where we had protection introduced. And then more recently, well, 2012, doesn't seem that recent anymore, but moved on to POLICE, which had protection, optimal loading, ice compression elevation. And in 2019, Dubois and Escula, I think, pardon my French there, but they produced a editorial blog which introduced a new acronym, Peace and Love. So that was the first main introduction where ice actually got removed from a potential clinical guideline. And there they proposed that actually the disruption to the tissue healing properties that ice may introduce was enough to kind of take it out from the acute, subacute and chronic injury management. However, there's sort of two sides to the coin within that one, because so they are saying that kind of tissue goes through the healing process and ice kind of puts a pause on that. So do we actually delay the process that it's going to ultimately have to go through anyway? But on the flip side of that, there's papers then come back and arguing that the actual evidence that that editorial blog was based on isn't strong enough. And they were looking at populations with quite a rare condition. So the actual results are hard to generalize in terms of that. So it has opened a bit of a can of worms still and confusion. But I do think in terms of the actual strong evidence to support ice, it has never been questioned that it's a great analgesic effect, a great analgesic modality that will create pain relief. And it's a cheap and easy alternative to providing pain relief without having to, you know, go to too many opioids or anything like that. So it's got a lot of positives still, regardless of this this confusion. But it has created more thought around the process. So I've kind of welcomed the discussion to it. And part of our research, actually, we've looked at kind of adverse effects to using ice as well. So when you do cover a large area, it significantly affects muscle strength and joint position sense, which kind of affects dynamic stability. So in terms of sport, if a player is kind of coming off a pitch and they've had a massive ACL tear, or you suspect an ACL tear, and you've got edema kind of really quickly, we can kind of understand covering a large area, they're not necessarily going to be going into load or weight bearing activity quickly. But for those where you can actually minimize the area that you're covering and reduce that effect on muscle strength and stability, you can start to sort of target the areas that you want to apply the ice. So that was a large part of our finding, is actually understanding where you can provide cryotherapy, but in a targeted manner to reduce the adverse effects on muscle strength and stability and get people back into weight-bearing activity earlier, but obviously still having that analgesic pain relief that ice is so good at. So a long-winded way of around the ice or not the ice, but I have really enjoyed the topic of it coming up, because I do think it kind of leads practitioners to thinking about, well, when and where should I use ice, rather than sort of just chucking it on and then players going immediately back into weight bearing in the gym when they might be at a risk of further injury and damage because they have reduced that muscle strength quite significantly, but obviously over a short period of time. So I don't think that the question itself has sort of resolved or got a particular yes or no to it, but I do think it opens up more thought in terms of where's it, you know, where should we use ice? And also, obviously, that brings into where do we use heat and contrast therapy as well, which is an interesting topic. I think we might get onto that later.
Yeah, so thank you. Just building on from that, you know, we talked about the use of ice in the acute stage. That's something that we use it very frequently for, is, you know, a swollen ankle. It's very easy to say to the player, you know, stick ice on it, stick a game ready on it. If we move now more to the subacute and chronic phases of rehab, Olivia, what does the research say about that? Does ice play a role in these phases?
So Peace and Love actually came in, and that was the first guideline to introduce subacute and chronic kind of thinking within their guideline. Previously, Rice, Price and Police were all acute injury management. And within that, that kind of introduces a bit of a new thought process in terms of what do we do for these subacute and chronic phases. There's still obviously a general rule of thumb of if there's inflammation and swelling, bruising present, to stick to ice, stick to cold. So obviously within the sort of chronic injuries, you can obviously get flare-ups of a bit of acute trauma during those processes where ice would be suitable for. But it also introduces a bit of a thought of contrast therapy. So there's a bit of a kind of bridge between when to move from cold to heat within a rehab journey. And that contrast therapy phase can kind of bridge the gap in the subacute stage. So once you kind of come into the end of inflammation and edema's settled, pain is starting to settle, that's when you can kind of start to introduce the contrast therapy. In terms of the research, it's still a relatively new process in terms of the technology that we've had to actually control temperature, time and compression to be able to carry out the research across multiple sites. Interestingly, ankles are probably the most evidence-based for contrast therapy because people could have easier access to it in terms of buckets of hot water and cold water. But to be able to apply contrast therapy accurately across the body, it has previously been very difficult, obviously, until we've had the advancement in technology to do so, which has obviously been a real excitement with the Promotion EV1 device, is that you can actually look at different combinations of time, temperature, and compression across the body. So the evidence base for that is building. And I think that's an area that will really grow in the coming years on actually defining and being able to optimize certain protocols depending on the situation of what that player presents with. So in terms of physiological response, I think there's still a general rule of thumb of inflammation, stick to cold. If there's stiffness, aching, that's when you can start to introduce the heat and the contrast. But that obviously, you know, that can present throughout different stages of a rehab journey where you might not expect another flare-up of a chronic condition. And the eyes can actually come in a bit later than you normally would have planned. But that, yeah, in terms of research, there's nothing strong in terms of contrast therapy yet. It's still very conflicting, but it is building. So it is an area that I do think will become more and more popular. But I'll hand over to Jonathan, who will have a bit of an input in terms of what he sees on a day-to-day going out into clubs.
Yeah, I think the things that stick out to me in the three different stages, as Olivia said, with Peace and Love coming in, you know, now starting to at least have injury guidelines or protocol guidelines that are not just acute only focused. How long is acute in comparison to subacute and chronic? In general terms, acute is such a short period of time in the overall rehab. So if acute is key and important, ice and compression in that phase to get pain and swelling under control, in many cases, we see pain and swelling under control even for major knee surgery, major ligament surgery in knees, or even knee replacements under control within a week, maybe 10 days. And in some injuries, it can be under control in 1 or 2 days. Then it really asks the question around, well, if you know ice, the reaction of ice and high compression is to vasoconstrict, then you're reducing blood flow. And Peace and Love as a research is saying, hang on a minute, if you're looking at acute, subacute and chronic, there is blood flow is important. And it's definitely more important in that subacute and chronic phase as you move into the tissue proliferation stage and you're, you know, starting to lay down new tissue. Blood flow is important. So we do see, and if you think about, you know, the journey that it's taking to come from price to police to, and the acute guidelines all focusing on ice in the early stage and only being acute focused, we're still not surprised that we see people over icing too long, icing too much, well beyond the acute phase. And in general terms, it's pretty logical because the outcome of ice and high compression in the acute stage is it reduces pain and swelling. And tell me any physio or athlete or consumer that doesn't like to get out of pain and swelling if they're injured. It's just common sense, isn't it? When you can feel it happening. So if that's what you associate when you ice and compress well, you know, you can recognize something's happening. So you're not surprised that people go back to what they know or they feel is comfortable. So I think the medical practitioners that I speak to, the more advanced ones, are more aware of, I've got to be aware of what my player is feeling, but I've also got to be thinking what's going on under the skin, what's going on under the wrap, what's going on the skin contact, because we know controlling skin temperature is important, and that's the only thing that matters when you when you're delivering these therapies, whether it's cryotherapy or contrast therapy or heat therapy. What is needed at that stage? And I think there's a general understanding that blood flow in the subacute phase is important. And at some stage, when players, as Olivia said, even in the most recent accredited police guidelines, they talk about optimal learning loading early, loading as quickly as you can in a safe way. So therefore, targeted therapy in that subacute phase where you're not icing everything, you don't get the side effect of reducing strength and stability, and you can get to loading quickly. That is more of what we start to see in the modern thinking, but there are still many pressures for a physio to, you know, go with the demands of what the player wants, which can be, it feels good. I've used icing. I've used Game Ready for or Physio Lab or ice for years. I've even got an ice bath at home. You know, it's the Wim Hof effect, isn't it? It's what's on the TV. Everybody loves ice. It gives them a huge shot of dopamine. It helps them get out of pain and swelling. So you can understand why people see that. I'm not sure that anybody would really can feel the difference in a subacute phase where you've got maybe contrast therapy that's helping lay down more supple, more flexible tissue in that proliferation stage. I'm not sure people can feel that. So putting therapies on that don't tell you what they're doing afterwards, it's not that easy to convince people to do it, even if the science and the logic says that it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, you've cracked it. I think you basically took the words out of my mouth. You know, as you said, that makes sense to me, but how do we get player buy-in? You know, how do we get these players who have been playing for 10, 15 years on board, strong personalities, who've only known ice, you know, how do we educate them on this best practice, and how might their opinions actually influence the modality choice you use?
Yeah, it's a real one that I see on a regular basis. I speak to elite athletes and physios across the world, in major sports and clubs, right the way through the EFL and even, you know, as far afield as the NBA, NFLs, and all the different leagues. And what is common is that it's difficult to educate a player that has grown up around ice and knows where that fits. And you've got to help them understand that every action has a reaction and icing has its place. And if you haven't had a scan, you've got a lot of swelling, you're in a lot of pain, and you're not going to be doing any loading for 3 or 4 days, and you're putting your feet up and trying to get as much drained away as you can and get that swelling under control, then ice is a great product. And icing a lot over a large area in that very acute stage, 1, 2, 3 days maybe, it's great. It's fantastic. And anybody who's gotten, had, and trusted Game Ready, Physio Lab, or just good old fashioned bags of ice, you know, they should not be afraid to use those at that stage. But thinking beyond acute, educating a player that, you know, when they first get injuries, they feel pain and swelling over a large area, but then they see a doctor and they get a scan and it's more localized, and then they can pinpoint exactly what's been injured, and explaining to them that blood flow is really important in that subacute phase, and, you know, icing everything has its place, but beyond that, now we can be a little bit more specific, helping you load early, load in a safe way, but continue to treat any little flare-ups of pain and swelling before they get too big. As Olivia said, with contrast, going cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, always starting and finishing on cryotherapy, it gives you that best of both worlds. But we see a demographic of players, if I'm honest, some of the old players that have, you know, maybe got their own Game Ready and been using it for 15 years, might be difficult to change. But we see young players that are very open to that discussion and are very open to understand what's different between an acute stage, a subacute, and a chronic. And it takes a good physio to turn a complex story and advice and research into a simple story for a player. You've got lots of pain and swelling. Let's get that controlled with large area cold compression. As it gets more localized, let's treat more local. Let's just treat what needs to be treated. You're going to need to lay down new tissue, and icing actually reduces blood flow. So let's reduce ice while we want to lay down good tissue and get in the gym and start to stretch. And then as we move into the latter stage, they don't need to know whether it's acute, subacute and chronic, but in the latter stage, they'll know that it's stiff. They've got scar tissue. They've got, you know, new tissue that's rejoined and is a bit rough and ready around the edges. And heat can be good to, you know, allow that to be more supple and more pliable, so that their latter stage of their exercises, you know, can focus on regaining that, you know, real strength and range of movement again. And, you know, how would you get range of movement improvements if you put a game ready on a product, on an injury, where you're going to freeze everything, not just the injury, but you're going to freeze the whole leg, the whole knee, the calf, the hamstring? It just they don't fit. So it's kind of trying to simplify that message, I think, is it's easily said, but it's difficult to do with certain players that have grown up for years with ice being the king.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Jonathan. And that, I guess, you know, things are evolving so quickly. But I mean, it's taken us 40 years to go from rice to peace and love research. Should we wait until other significant clinical research fills all the research gaps, just carry on doing what we have always done? Or should we consider the direction of travel and the guidelines and tailor the therapy to explore the results? I guess based on this, bringing this all together, where does promotion technology fit into this journey?
Yeah, Olivia, maybe, you know, some comments for you and then, you know, I can talk a little bit more about the players from there.
Yeah, of course. So in terms of the direction of travel, obviously everything seems to be tailored towards, you know, one size doesn't fit all in terms of everything in terms of treatment. So I think that it is going to go more individualized for different players, different people. We know we've kind of been trying to develop clinical protocols for different injuries and different individuals, but there's so many factors that do go into it. So gender, age, skin type, BMI, there's a lot of factors that kind of tie in that actually affect an individual's response to thermal stress. So I think it's a difficult one in terms of, that's probably why it's taken the research as long as it has. But I think having the opportunity now with advancement in technology, we can start to customize protocols to kind of fit the situation that you see present. And I can see that will be the direction of the guidelines, that it will go more to a tailored approach of, what is that person presenting with? What symptoms do you need to actually control? And when can you start to bring in contrast therapy and heat in a targeted manner? And yeah, I think we've got to take the bull by the horns in a way in terms of that, and not wait for a definite defined protocol. With my PhD, we looked at combinations that we could do with the Promotion EV1 device. And there was 80,000 combinations, and thinking, how on earth do you do that in 3 years? So I think even for that, we kind of took what we had in the research of knowing the ideal therapeutic range in literature for skin temperature being between 10 and 15 degrees, and then taking a high and low compression and kind of as a starting point and working from there. So I can see why the research takes as long as it does. But I think with the evidence that we've got so far and basic physiology in terms of what cold and heat therapy do, I think the ability to now control what temperature in a specific location is a real advantage now. But I don't see, you know, ice being completely redundant. There's definitely a place for ice, that there will always be a place for ice. And I don't see that changing, but I think now we've kind of added to the toolkit that's available, and actually being able to apply in a, you know, across the body as much as possible, and then also in a targeted manner that only benefits the actual modalities that a physio team and medical team can offer a player.
Yeah, and just to build on that, Dara, in terms of do we wait for new significant clinical research? If it's taken them that many years to go from just his acute injury management to start to think about the full rehab, not just the acute stage, then you know, we could be waiting an awful long time. What EV1 does give is it's a versatile tool, as Olivia said. You can program exactly the time, temperature, and compression, and that data is, you know, we are now starting to use. We started a project a few months ago, which is a two-year project, again working with two universities to develop EV1's data, the app, and we'll soon be launching a dashboard so that medical practitioners can share best practice on protocols, you know, and perhaps get some tips and some guidelines as to what to consider in the different phases based on the injury type, and where different protocols may work or may be better, because it's to wait for the research to cover subacute, subacute, and chronic for I don't know how many ISICs injury types are there, and you know, it's just the combinations are huge. So I think EV1 at least captures data that's very useful for research to continue, which is good, and best practice to be shared, and we start to include that in some of the standard protocols that come with the product. But I think what is starting to become clear is that teams, the kit that medical teams have, you know, can be really enriched if they're versatile and they're flexible. You know, a medical team that can deliver effective and additional therapy sessions in acute, subacute, and chronic that are outside the club's treatment room. You know, an injury journey doesn't stop when the player's not in the club, and most players are not in the club 2 or 3 days a week, and they're not in there the week at the evenings and certain times. So, you know, when a player's traveling or at home, you know, or he's in a, on a bus or in a hotel room, he can still deliver very accurately defined protocols working with the club's S&C coach and physio to design the therapy, whether it's acute, subacute therapy, chronic therapy, whether it's contrast, you know, icing or heat therapy. So we know many clubs have got lots of bits of kit, and it could be Winback or Techotherapy or other large, you know, maybe even the Game Ready contrast therapy machine. You know, they're all really limited to the medical treatment room. So, you know, why not take the opportunity for a portable machine that doesn't use ice and water to be able to be more flexible as, you know, players are outside of the medical team room, you know, over a long period of time. That I think are ways where EV1 can fit. I don't think EV1 is the tool that solves every problem for a club, that's for sure. And there are certain ways it should fit in.
Yeah, that's brilliant, Jonathan. I think taking from that is that we need a more flexible toolkit. The EV1 seems to provide that. So should I go and tell the physios working at my club that we should get rid of the other forms of current technology being commonly used? You know, are there any weaknesses to EV1, and how can the technology potentially work together?
Yeah, I think, you know, great question. Yes, diversity in the kit that your members have got is important, and no, EV1 doesn't solve all the solutions. EV1 has strengths and weaknesses. If you have a player coming off of with a suspected ACL, as Olivia said, you don't know what you're dealing with. You haven't got a scan. You can't position, you know, a treatment plate that's 53 square centimeters on an EV1. And for some injuries, a hard treatment plate won't be very comfortable in the acute phase, especially not with high compression. But take our number one injury that, you know, it's probably 25% of what everybody's dealing with and costed to deal with is the hamstring injury, then, you know, EV1 is a great partner for the most common injuries out there. It fits in the toolkit well. No, don't get rid of Physio Lab. Don't get rid of Game Ready. It's not about EV1 versus, you know, EV1 is a really good complementary tool because of its portability, because of its ability to switch from cryotherapy 6 degrees on a plate and control the skin temperature, maintain and control skin temperature. Everybody thinks about treatment just getting to a temperature, but actually maintaining it is just as difficult very accurately. And we can switch between 6 degrees and 40 degrees for contrast therapy in around 30 to 40 seconds. You know, that gives a lot of versatility to the physio and the equipment that the team can use. So no, please keep your large area cold compression products, but think about where our advice would be, think about where they fit and where they fit well, which injury types. EV1, you know, is not so easy to work around the malleoli and the ATFL injuries in the ankle, as an example, because of the hard plate. It's got some good applications in the ankle injuries, and we're developing really good compression wraps for syndesmosis and Achilles first. They will be on the market in the next few months. But EV1 can be a really good partner to the modalities that you commonly see in most medical teams now. So it's not a silver bullet, but it certainly can help give the tools to your practitioners as to where they can be more flexible around the needs of acute, subacute, and chronic rehab.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think that's a brilliant summary to what we've talked about today. And it's been a really exciting insight into the world of cryotherapy, contrast, heat and compression therapy, and also gives our listeners something to go home and think about. So thank you very much for that. And I think that's all we have time for today. But thank you to Jonathan. Thank you to Olivia for joining us today. For our listeners, if you'd like to read more about promotion with the view of using this technology within your own setting, we can attach a link to promotion's website, as well as contact details for Jonathan in the podcast description on the FMPA website. So thank you guys very much for joining us today.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be with you.
Thanks, guys. And for our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to the FMPA on our Spotify and SoundCloud accounts, where you can listen to all of our podcasts. Alternatively, our podcasts are available for free via the podcast section on the FMPA website. You've been listening to the Football Medicine and Performance Podcast. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.